You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out, for many men of medicine, usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
Welcome into my podcast here, the Hillbilly Luchador Show. This is old JP coming at you. And this one here was one that I put together over the last few weeks that really kind of took me by surprise, I guess you'd say. I was going to do just a short show about my history with that plant called tobacco. Smoking, chewing, dipping, all that stuff, and ended up getting into researching more and more about tobacco in general and some of the historical facts that are connected with tobacco, and it's been a lot of fun to really go down that rabbit hole and do some research on it. So I decided to throw in some of the historical facts about tobacco before we get into my personal history with tobacco. Now, first thing I want to say before we get into the body of this podcast, that if you want to check out anything about this show, you can just head over to joshporter08.com or look down in the, the description underneath these episodes here, wherever you're listening to this at. On the internet, should have everything right down there in print for you. So you can do that. Secondly, a lot of my heroes growing up were big tobacco smokers. I've thought about it quite a bit, and there was Waylon Jennings, who smoked the majority of his life. B.B. King smoked some in his younger days. I don't know when he quit exactly. The great Keith Richards. Then you get into movie stars. Tons of movie stars smoked, at least in the movies. I know Clint Eastwood was a smoker. It was just prevalent everywhere. Burt Reynolds smoked in some of his movies. It was everywhere. It was all over TV. And I remember whenever I was young, also I'll include a couple of those throughout this episode, there was advertising for cigarettes until I think it was the early 90s. When the federal government put a stop to cigarette companies basically marketing their products on television and radio and billboards and whatnot. Because, as I'll talk about throughout this episode and on into the next one, there's actually going to be a two-parter to get more into the historical facts of tobacco. I only got through the early 1930s on this one, so that tells you just how much went on with tobacco in modern history or whatever. But as I was saying, there was just a lot of marketing directed toward younger people because nicotine is something that you want to get people when they're young. You want to get them hooked on it. That way they continue to come back to you and do business with you until they leave this earth. Most of the time is how that works. But I didn't want this to come across in any way as a condemnation of tobacco, because I'm not a, you know, a regular tobacco user. I'm just kind of fascinated with how, over time, it has been able to stay in our culture. I mean, it's been pretty amazing that something that has as many downsides or cons, if you will, as tobacco use has been on the forefront and so commercially successful and continues to be to this day. It's amazing to me that people are still smoking and enjoying it, you know. But there have been many, many cases of people smoking their entire lives and never having any health problems from it. I had a great-great uncle who smoked. Shoot, he probably smoked 75 years of his 85 or so years he was here. And, you know, I mean, hell, if you live to be into your late 80s, something's going to get you eventually. And it wasn't lung cancer with him that got him. So you can't blame everything on tobacco. It's not a devilish drug, but it is something that does get people, and different people react to it differently. Apparently, I read some things about nicotine actually changes your brain's chemistry and makes you can make you a different person as far as having to get that hit from the tobacco and those cigarettes or whatnot, or however you're getting nicotine, whether it be smokeless tobacco or whatever. But anyway, I'm going to get on with the episode here, and like I said, this will probably be a two-parter. I'm going to get more into the post-1930 tobacco history in the next episode, and it'll be a little less personal talk, I guess, on that next episode. But again, I'd like to thank all y'all for listening, and here we go. Some historical facts about tobacco.
The working day out here stretches from sunup to sundown, but there's always time for a Marlboro. Marlboro, the cigarette that gives you plenty of flavor, flavor rich and full.
This podcast started out as a kind of recollection, if you will, on my relationship with tobacco. And it kind of morphed into me spending a half a day researching tobacco. So this is what I come up with. And I'm going to just kind of read a little bit to y'all, and because I made a lot of notes for this part of the podcast. Second part of this podcast will be coming up a little later on in the show here, and it's more of an off-the-cuff type thing where I basically share my personal relationship with tobacco. Now, the use of tobacco has a long history. Experts believe the tobacco plant, as we know it, began growing in the Americas around 6000 BC. Of course, most of the mentions of tobacco use in historical documents came much, much later. October 15th, 1492, Christopher Columbus mentions tobacco in his diaries. our journals. Columbus wrote, "We found a man in a canoe from Santa Maria to Fernanda. He had with him some dried leaves, which are high in value among them." The natives, that is. "For a quantity of it was brought to me at San Salvador." That's from Christopher Columbus's journal whenever he first made his way over here. Over time and throughout history, tobacco use became more and more of a common occurrence in books and historical documents. Eventually, there would be a love-hate relationship with tobacco, developing with tobacco users and non-tobacco users. Skip ahead to the 1830s here in the United States. The first organized anti-tobacco movement is formed. Tobacco use at that time was considered to dry out the mouth that created a morbid and diseased thirst which only liquor could quench. I thought that was pretty funny. In 1847, a familiar name opened shop in England. Philip Morris began selling hand-rolled Turkish cigarettes. Now, by 1854, Morris's cigarettes on Old Bond Street has become the center of the retail tobacco trade. Now, by 1860, the census for Virginia and North Carolina lists 348 tobacco factories. Basically, virtually all producing chewing tobacco, not so much cigarettes. Only six list smoking tobacco as a side product, which is manufactured from the scraps of the chewing tobacco. Flip right through here. Like I said, y'all, I spent this past Saturday just researching this stuff. I didn't plan to go down this rabbit hole, but I did. And I figured, why not share it with y'all? Now, in 1862, the first federal tax was levied on tobacco to help pay for the Civil War. The initial tax totaled only about $3 million. And as we go on, you'll see that that money goes up substantially. And you'll also see why I feel like, even though tobacco is terrible for you, or at least the modern day big sales of it is, it probably won't never go away. Anyway, back to my point. The very first cigarette factory was opened in the U.S. in 1864. The factory produced almost 20 million cigarettes in its first year. 20 million. Before then, people were just rolling their own. Philip Morris passes away in 1873. His wife and brother take over the company. Another familiar name, R.J. Reynolds, only 2 years later, founds the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company to produce mainly chewing tobacco still. But as you know, would go on to be one of the biggest and most successful tobacco companies in the world today. By the 1880s, advertising improvements would lead to an ability for companies to sell some of the branded products nationwide. The Philip Morris Company would go public in 1881 and would eventually pass ownership to William Curtis Thompson and his family. So, you know, Philip Morris has been around for a really long time. And I think that a lot of people think that it's still the same people who started the company are running it, and that's not the case. There's been quite a few ownership changes over the years. Also, in 1894, Brown and Williamson formed the Winston-Salem Company, making mostly plug, snuff, and some pipe tobacco. Now, Winston, obviously, has become one of the biggest, you know, cigarette companies in the world. In 1895, the first known motion picture commercial is made. It was an ad for Admiral Cigarettes, produced by Thomas Edison's company. So there's been a lot of big names that have had had a part in the tobacco industry over the years. R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company would incorporate in 1899. It's hard to believe that the tobacco industry was already this huge before the turn of the century. That's a fact, man. That's really, really hard to believe, actually. Now we're getting into the 1900s. In 1900, 4.4 billion cigarettes are sold that year alone. A small drop-off occurred in 1901, with 3.5 billion cigars and cigarettes being sold. 4 in 5 American men smoke at least one cigar per day in 1901. Wow. You know, it makes you wonder, you know, during that time they had no idea, of course, dangers of smoking, that is. We'll carry on. Philip Morris Company sets up a corporation on Broad Street in New York in 1902 called Marlboro. Now, this was something that was pretty dang interesting to me because I never knew this. To skip ahead, by 1910, federal taxes from tobacco products are at $58 million, with only 13% of that coming from cigarettes. Still, a lot of people chewing tobacco back then. The first strong link was made between lung cancer and smoking in 1912 by Dr. Isaac Adler. By 1913, the American Society for the Control of Cancer is formed to inform the public about the disease. It later became known as the American Cancer Society. So it's been around for a long time, 1913, over 100 years. Also in 1913, the birth of a modern cigarette is introduced by the R.J. Reynolds Company called Camel Cigarettes. It's crazy they've been around that long. Tobacco was even making its way into the art world by 1915. Poet Graham Lee, I believe you say Heminger, wrote, "Tobacco is a dirty weed. I like it. It satisfies no normal need. I like it. It makes you thin. It makes you lean. It takes the hair right off of your bean. It's the worst darn stuff I've ever seen. I like it." Even the poets were getting into it by 1915. Now in 1921, R.J. Reynolds spent $8 million on advertising, mainly on the Camel brand. That shows you the power of advertising really made a difference in the tobacco world and always has. Also in 1921, states began to tax cigarette sales at 2 cents a pack of cigarettes. There was still a push and pull with the sale of cigarettes. In 1922, 15 states banned the sale, possession, and advertising of cigarettes. By 1923, Camel cigarettes accounted for 45% of the market. Just goes to show, even back then, advertising money was money well spent for any product, especially tobacco products. Now in 1924, here's the little tidbit I was actually talking about earlier that I was kind of mind blown by. I never knew this. In 1924, Philip Morris introduces Marlboro cigarettes as a woman's cigarette that is mild as May. Think about that. How they changed their advertising later on to become basically a brand that was marketed at what I would think to be males, cowboys, tough guys. Started out as the woman's cigarette. The brand continued to be marketed toward women over the next several years. A 1927 ad read, "Women quickly develop discerning taste." That is why Marlboro's now ride in so many limousines, attend so many bridge parties, and repose in so many handbags. So basically they're saying, if you're well-to-do, you smoke Marlboros. And if you're a fancy lady, you definitely got to have you a pack of those. It's weird how they changed their marketing over the years. By 1927, Kansas becomes the last state to drop its ban on cigarette sales. There was simply too much money to be made. It didn't last very long, the ban of cigarettes. In 1929, Lucky Cigarettes print advertisements that read, "Many prominent athletes smoke Luckies all day long with no harmful effects to wind or physical condition." Wow, how the times have changed. Also in 1929, Philip Morris buys a factory in Richmond, Virginia, and begins manufacturing its own cigarettes. This is the last little tidbit that I have from my research the other day. And it's by 1930, the federal tax revenues from tobacco products are over $500 million, 80% of them from cigarettes. And that little bit of a time, that's how much it jumped. Now I stopped my research here, and I'm gonna try to put the rest of it together, but it's just absolutely amazing how much money in 1930 cigarettes were bringing in. I'm looking forward to researching on down the line.
You know, it's really gratifying to see so many guys today enjoying tobacco without lighting up. Just like me, they've gone smokeless. Now, I'm kind of partial to Skoal with the wintergreen flavor. Or for straight tobacco taste, try Copenhagen. Or mild happy day.
Great if you're just starting out.
There you go. But whichever, just a pinch between your cheek and gum is all it takes. And I'm mighty proud to say that Copenhagen Skoal and Happy Days are official sponsors of the 1980 Winter Olympics.
All right, now, Otto, what I would like to do is just tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story before I get started, because I like to did that. I like just like to get myself...
So, I was walking the dogs the other night, and an old memory popped into my head. I'm not sure what really spawned it. But for whatever reason, I could smell and taste wintergreen Skoal. Now this It's very random. You know, it was a cold winter night, and I'm out walking the dogs, and this old memory pops into my head. You know, I hadn't had wintergreen skull since I was probably, I'd say probably at least 16 or 17 years old. So almost 20 years ago. And it's funny how certain things in life just stick with you. And I remember what got me started on dipping skull back then, which it was a short period for me. I probably did it for about 6 months. I don't think I was ever addicted to it. I was just a kid, to be honest with you. But I thought it was cool from watching baseball players and other grown-ups do it. I guess that's what gets most people into tobacco use, is watching grown-ups do it whenever, you know, you're a kid and it looks cool. Plus, it's something that you're not supposed to be doing, especially if you're underage. So it makes it even that more interesting to explore. So anyway, I tried to think back to what originally got me into it, and I think I could trace it back to wanting to be a cowboy. Because at this time in my life, I was full-blown trying to be a cowboy anyway, as far as the attire that I wore, from the Wrangler jeans to the boots to the hat, the whole deal. And, of course, you got to dip skull, you know, if you're going to be a cowboy or chewing tobacco. And I tried the chewing tobacco. And that was a very, very, very not pleasant experience. I did not last long with chewing tobacco at all. I actually tried it once, and that was it. And I've never done it again and never will. But skull seemed to be a little bit more enjoyable, and I cannot remember where I got it from. I had to get it from somebody, maybe through school or something, but I cannot remember who I got it from. But I do remember the very first day I did it. And I was by myself, and I was at my grandparents. Of course, they didn't know. But I had I'd already smoked cigarettes by this point. But, you know, just here and there, not a lot. But I remember experimenting with cigarettes and then getting a hold of that skull. And the first day I did it was a summer day. Seems like. I know there was a lot of sunshine. Come to think of it, the grass wasn't green, so it couldn't have been summertime. Maybe it was late winter, early spring, because it wasn't terribly cold or anything. But it was on a very, very sunshine-filled day. And I remember I put it in, and I walked to the gate that was behind their house. It was probably about 60 or 70 yards, maybe, behind their house. Not very far. But that gate was bent. It's one of those big gates, you know, for pastures. One of those big, like, red gates you see. Metal gates for, like, barbed wire fence pastures. And I remember the gate, it was always bent because Papa would hit it with his truck. But I remember walking out of that gate. And I'd had it in for maybe a couple of minutes. started to feel a buzz. Things weren't necessarily spinning, but it was a big head rush. I can vividly remember that and thinking, boy, howdy. I don't know if I'm ready for this or not. And I had to stand there and prop myself up with my elbows and forearms on the gate and just kind of leaned over and looked at the ground, borderline nauseous, wondering if I was going to be physically sick. Could I hold on, you know, and finish the experience? And I did. I think I kept it in for about 10 or 15 minutes. And once I conquered that first little whatever it is you get, buzz, jitters, whatever you want to call it, nausea, I remember feeling tough. I remember feeling grown. Hell, I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. I was doing something most folks don't do, I thought. And there was another night that is very, very vivid in my skull-dipping experience. I was spending the night with my grandparents again. And this was, you know, maybe a couple of months after that or something. And they would always go to bed at a pretty decent hour, 9 or 10 o'clock. And I was notorious for staying up all night just watching TV and whatnot. I just loved to stay up all night, especially when I was younger. I'd stay up all night and sleep half the day away on Saturday and didn't think a thing about it. It's funny how that changes when you get older, too. Now, if I stay up late like that, I feel like hell the next day, even if I don't drink or anything. But anyway, I remember they'd gone to bed and I was going to get me a dip. But I wasn't going to do it in the house just in case somebody got up. So, because, you know, you might be tough and all, but you still don't want to get caught doing something that you're not supposed to do. Plus, it was out of respect for them, too. So, I went in my little bag or whatever, and I got my can of skull. Went out on the front porch. And, man, it was cold that night. And I sat down on the patio, on the front porch, that is, on the wrought iron type glider. You know, those old antique gliders. I've actually got it out in the garage now. And I just remember looking out into the night and feeling it's very strange, feeling a sense of freedom, a sense of rebellion. It's so stupid, you know, now looking back as a grown-up, it's not a big deal at all, but when you're first experimenting and experiencing things, that's a feeling that you just don't get again in life. And my skull dipping, it went on for a little while longer. Like I said, probably about 6 months. I think it went on not quite till I was 17, I know for sure. Because it wasn't that I was worried about getting cancer at that time or my health at all. Because, you know, when you're a kid, you don't have any kind of sense of mortality at all. I mean, I think back at some of the stuff that I did when I was just a kid like that. And it's a miracle I'm still here. But the reason why I quit dipping skull was women. the girls, the ladies. And it being a nasty habit, messing your teeth up and all that. And plus, I wanted to kiss a girl, man. And you can't get no girl to kiss you after you've been dipping Skoal or chewing tobacco or any of that crap. You might pull it off with cigarettes when they're young and dumb. But you ain't gonna get it when you've been dipping Skoal. And I was getting away from my cowboy ways too, so the Skoal went by the wayside. But until the other night, I haven't thought about Wintergreen Skoal since then. Dang sure haven't had a craving for any. And I have no plans on starting back. But I just thought it was kind of weird that little memory popped in my head. And it's such a vivid memory of me sitting on that porch and standing at that gate. And it's attached to Skoal. How weird. I'll go ahead and talk about my relationship with tobacco just a little bit. Because for the most part, I've always enjoyed it. I do not smoke cigarettes. I did for a short period of time, off and on, 16, 17. I think I probably quit smoking officially when I was about 19, right about the time I was legal to buy them. And I always, mainly, after that, if I did smoke a cigarette, it would just be socially with people, you know, if I was drinking with my buddies or whatever. You know, it's like that Joe Nichols song, "She Only Smokes When She Drinks." A lot of people only smoke when they drink, and I was one of those people, and I did that probably into my early 20s, maybe. But the pitfalls of being addicted to cigarettes, I just couldn't do it, man. My mom has always smoked for the most part. I think she quit maybe my first 10 years of my life after, you know, she had to quit whenever she was pregnant with me, and then started back smoking after my parents got divorced when I was, you know, around 10. And she's been smoking ever since. Her and my stepdad, they smoked in the house whenever I was growing up and stuff. And I just, like I said, I did it too when I was younger, just because it was something I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I loved that rebellious feeling. But as far as smoking cigarettes as a habit, I just couldn't do it, man. Not only is it very expensive, it's just terrible for your health. I don't have to go down the laundry list, and I'm not hating on anybody that smokes. You know, it's to each their own. But for me, cigarettes just weren't worth the downside, I guess you'd say. And I had this phase that I went through a couple years ago. I've kind of got over it now. But I'd see a young person smoking, and I just want to shake them. I just want to shake them. I just want to say something. I never did. But to see a beautiful or a young man that's in shape, a beautiful girl or a young man that's in shape in the prime of their lives, you know, physically, and youth on their side, to see them smoking, it really got under my skin for a while, and I don't even know why. I don't really know why. I guess maybe because some of the people who are close to me have aged quicker than they probably should have, a big portion of it due to cigarette smoking. Maybe that was it. But I never crossed that line and said anything to somebody young. But to see somebody young smoke is a different experience when you get a little age on you, because I guess I can see a little bit further down the line now. And to see somebody throw away their youth and good health, because if you don't take care of yourself when you're young, your health will really go downhill later on in life, and the aging process is sped up exponentially with smoking. And I guess that was my whole deal with it. But I still smoke a cigar every now and then. I'm a little bit hypocritical in that regard, I guess. It's not that often anymore, though. I got to where I was smoking them last year, I think, about once a month, maybe, or something like that. Never more than that, though. And I just kind of stopped. I haven't smoked a cigar, I guess, in about 6 months now. But I got me some Black and Miles on hand. Just for whatever reason, sometimes I like to have a glass of scotch or bourbon and smoke a cigar out on the back patio. Mainly at night. I like to smoke at night if I'm gonna sit out and smoke a cigar. But I was smoking them good cigars last year. And a lot of them are good. They're worth the price of a $10 or $12 cigar. Especially those Cohiba. Cohiba. I believe it's Cohiba's the way you pronounce that. And those are great. But I like the smaller ones. And the local cigar shops around here only carry the bigger ones most of the time. And I just can't smoke one of them old big ones. I'm not a regular smoker, like I said. And for a novice like myself, I can't smoke one of them big ones. But it's very relaxing, especially when you got you a glass of bourbon in your hand or scotch. Which last year I got into scotch as well. But yeah, I just was thinking a little bit about my history with tobacco, and there was nothing better than those early memories of smoking tobacco. Cigarettes. I remember, boy, it used to be a task to get tobacco, a lot like getting alcohol whenever you're underage. Earliest memories of smoking cigarettes. Hell, I guess I was probably about 14. Maybe earlier than that, maybe 13 or 14 whenever I first smoked cigarettes. And my parents would buy cartons because they smoked a lot. My stepdad particularly, old Eddie, he used to buy those. He smoked those old Benson and Hedges menthols. And he'd buy him a carton of them, and they'd put them in the freezer. And, man, I wanted to smoke. I wanted to try it. They smoked all the time. It looked enjoyable to them. More so than that, some people at school smoked. And I thought that was cool. So I went ahead and took me a pack of them out of the freezer. Because, you know, somebody's got a carton of cigarettes, surely they wouldn't miss a pack of them here and there, right? That was my thinking anyway. And I remember taking them. Boy, they was rough. Them things was, them Benson and Hedges ain't for amateurs, really. It's a cheaper brand of cigarettes for those of y'all non-smokers out there. And I remember I'd smoke them things, and I'd go to my grandparents every other weekend, and it was cold then, too, I do remember. And I went out behind their garage during the daytime. Papa was gone somewhere, it was just me and Granny there. And I went out behind the garage, fired me one up. Because, you know, I didn't have nothing else to do that day. I needed to smoke a few cigarettes, you know what I'm talking about. Since I wasn't at home getting that secondhand smoke, I guess. And I remember standing out there, and like it was the same type feeling, just rebellion, feeling big, you know. But I went back in the house, sat down in the living room with Granny. She's watching TV. And she was like, she looked at me funny. I was sitting across the room from her. You know, I'm a kid. I'm like, she ain't gonna. I was out in the open. Ain't no way she gonna smell these cigarettes on me. What a bonehead. She said, "You been smoking?" I can remember it like yesterday. I was like, no, that's, I guess that's from Mom and them, whatever. Whenever y'all pick me up, I guess that's, you smell it off of them. She didn't ever say much more about it. I found out later that they talked to my mom and them whenever all that was going on. It wasn't very long after that I got busted with them cigarettes at home. Had a big, you know, to-do about it. Had to sit down and talk about all of it and all the things that I was getting into and all this. It was really all blown completely out of proportion. But I was just being a kid, man. But they got me off the cigarettes, at least the ones they had there at the house. I damn sure didn't take no more from the house. I had to go get them somewhere else. And I did get a better brand. At least I stepped up to Marlboro Lights and tried. I used to smoke Marlboro Lights. I smoked Marlboro Reds for a while because that's what the cowboys smoked, you know. You had to be a tough guy to smoke a Marlboro Red. And I moved on to Winston's. I liked them Winston's. Those were cool-looking packing. So much of this stuff, I smoked Camels, too. I like Camel Lights because I liked the pack, too. It looked cool. So much of these tobacco products, I really do feel like, especially with cigarettes, are marketed to young people to get you hooked young so you smoke until you're dead, pretty much. But luckily, I got away from them. But I had some good time smoking cigarettes, man. Especially in my youth, I remember going to see my old buddy Wiley and sitting on his front porch. And either he wouldn't be home or he hadn't got up yet. And this was during the summertime whenever I was 16 or 17 years old, going, sitting on his front porch and waiting on him. And, of course, his parents wouldn't be at home or anything. And I'd sit out there and smoke cigarettes waiting on him, like the cool kid that I was. Now I see kids that are 16 or 17, and they're just babies, man. And I think about how just ridiculous I was at that age and how we all just grow, you know. Tobacco, it's not the devil, you know. It's not something that I would ever go whole hog in. I'd like now, I don't think that I'll be buying any cigarettes anymore. I just don't care for them anymore. I don't have any desire to smoke a cigarette. But I don't fault anybody that does. I just had some random memories I wanted to share with y'all on tobacco. I don't know where this stuff comes from sometimes, man. But I do like to talk about it, these weird memories that I have. A lot of this podcast is dedicated to memories. And that's not because I'm living in the past. I just think that the things that we have done in the past make us who we are today. And it's very, very interesting to pick apart the little granules, the small parts of your life, and the way you've been affected by things. Because even now in my life, I still notice it. Tobacco prices. I still notice all the marketing that is dedicated to tobacco. And you say, well, they don't have, you know, advertisements as far as television and magazines anymore. Well, they don't have to, man. If you go in as a convenience store, it just about knocks you down how much tobacco they sell in there. But yeah, that's that's some random memories on tobacco for you. My experience with tobacco.
Does that mean we're going to be raided?
Oh, that's sure.
Jesse, are you referred to as a hotline?
Not that I know of.
Prettiest one I've ever seen, anyway.
We have to wrap it up, my friends. We've chosen Mr. Waylon Jennings to sing the last song as we leave you. We thank you very much. Thank you, Tom Paul.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Miss Jessie.
Thank you.
And Mr. Waylon, thanks a whole bunch.
Appreciate it.
We'll see you folks next week. Hit it, Waylon.
Long ago and far away. I turned the world all which way.
Just because you asked me to.
Like unto no other fear. Simple love is simple true. There ain't no end to what I do. Just because you asked me to. Anything you ask me to.